Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Salon Talks. I'm Ali Joseph, and today I'm joined by a very interesting author with an equally interesting backstory, Bruce Cannon Gibney, author of A Generation of Sociopaths, How the Baby Boomers Betrayed America. It was named as one of Esquire's 6 books to read after the recent election, and Fortune said it was sure to be controversial. So let's get into it. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm happy you're here. This is a really unique premise, and as Fortune said, a controversial thesis. Tell us a little bit about the book and what the genesis of it was.
Sure. So I really wanted at first to understand why America had been stagnating, because it struck me that every challenge after 1946 seemed fairly trivial to every challenge that had come before, right? There was no continent to settle. There were no world wars to fight. Vietnam was certainly not on the scale of World War I, World War II, and so on down the line. You'd have temporary setbacks like Vietnam or the JFK assassination. But something about American dynamism really seemed to peter out in the 1990s. And I first tried to answer this question in a 2011 essay, What Happened in the Future?, which circulated around Silicon Valley, and I thought that Silicon Valley was getting a little too enthused with these sort of Me Too products or the social networks light, so not really your Facebooks, but more sort of your snaps per se. But obviously the dynamics of national stagnation, you know, transcend like the 25-mile radius around Stanford, and so I decided to push my investigation out further and further. And that eventually led me to the baby boomers, because their policies and their behaviors, both individually and politically, have been radically different than that of any generation we've seen before. And although it's too soon to arrive at a definitive answer, they seem to be quite different from the behaviors and policies of younger generations.
Great. So let's just distill this a little bit for the people who are watching. A generation of sociopaths makes the, posits that the baby boomer generation is sociopathic in its behavior because it was the first generation to have a completely different approach to life, right? More permissive parenting, more television, TV dinners, perhaps less unity in the family than before. That's a pretty strong premise. You know, nobody likes a sociopath. what do you see the difference is between these folks, and how are they responding to this and subsequent generations?
Sure. Well, something like close to 70 million Americans did appear to like a sociopath to one degree or another a few months ago. So, I think the salient difference between the boomers and the generations that came before and the generations that came after are a set of behaviors that I do think correspond to the clinical indicators for sociopathy.
So, which are?
Sure. So, just to summarize, it's basically me first and Dan the consequences, but run through the list, it's improvidence, so an inability to plan for the future. You can see this in cohort savings rates, which start falling when the boomers enter the workforce. They really just don't save for their future, and you know, if you're much under 50, you're going to find that out when your parents start coming to you for help. Same thing applies nationally on Social Security, right? So all these personal behaviors translate into international policy. Climate is another sort of indicator of both improvidence and lack of empathy. So they don't really care that much about people other than themselves. Even strange things like an inability to form lasting relationships. You can see this like in the rates of divorce, which are generationally unique at comparable points in marriage. So we only really have data for younger generations through about the 10th year of marriage. But if you look at the 10th year of marriage for younger generations versus the prime boomers, you actually see that the rates of divorce have been declining for the younger people. So they can't even, you know, sort of, so not only are they different from prior generations who were sort of famously like, you know, they couldn't get divorced, they were going to stay in it for the children, what have you, they're actually different from their children as well, who were raised in a much more permissive environment and an era of no-fault divorce, no easy divorce. And you can populate the entire clinical checklist this way. And you can see also how it matches to national policy. So, you know, sociopaths tend not to plan for the future. And there's been really a massive subsidence in investments in infrastructure, research and development, all things where the payoffs could be expected to occur after the boomers' lifetimes. And much more towards consumption. So they'd rather allocate those dollars to themselves.
Okay. So you are a smart dude, and you use a lot of big words. So let's just distill this for all the people. Boomers, improvident, they don't save, they don't prepare, right? They also lack empathy, a sociopathic trait. They don't really care. You're saying what happens to the earth, and they aren't good at saving in making decisions, right? So how has that filtered through your book, and how did it prove out? Like, what did you learn after positing that these people are all sociopaths, and what happens to them now?
Right. So I don't posit that all boomers are sociopaths. I just suggest that a very large fraction of them are, and that actually. The National Institute of Mental Health conducted a survey in the 1980s. It's one of the few large-scale surveys ever done on American mental health. And they found significantly higher levels of sociopathy in boomer age cohorts then, and speculated that it would get worse over time, and I think it has. And the way that's played out would be irrelevant but for one fact, and that's that the boomers are an enormous generation and have had the opportunity to influence national policy. And within the framework of policy, they're all more or less the same age. And they've cohered rather uniquely instead of on the traditional lines of sort of race or gender or class on age-based criteria. So the first and most famous, obviously, was the age-based draft during the Vietnam War. Rather oddly, they all rallied around, as soon as they got the vote, around lowering the drinking age for themselves. That drinking.
So there is a self-interested behavior.
Strongly.
That actually was fun for some people.
It was fun for some people, but frequently fun has consequences for other people.
Doesn't it? It sure does. Yeah.
So when I was born in 1976, the national debt, which is going to be your problem, my problem, children's problem.
Children's problem.
Right, was about 34% of GDP on a gross basis, and today it's 105%. And the CBO projects it's going to be at World War II levels by the end of boomer tenure. Boomers were an absolute majority of the electorate in the early 1980s, and now, so they controlled both the House and the presidency by the early 1990s. And even after 2016, obviously, we have Boomer in the White House again, and they still have a supermajority in the House. And in the book, I do focus mainly on mainstream white boomers who had a fairly homogenous upbringing, and less so on the minority experience because they had a much more diverse and much different experience. And I think that's what allows one to sort of make certain generalizations about a generation which might otherwise be harder to make, right? So, the 1950s that they grew up in were not sort of notorious for their incredible diversity, right? Conformity is the word that leaps to mind. They were all kind of raised in the same way, and they subsequently all sort of behaved in highly similar ways, at least on the policy front.
Mm-hmm. We will talk some more about this, but if you're just joining us, I'm joined today by Bruce Cannon Gibney. I said that right, right? And his new book, A Generation of Sociopaths, How the Baby Boomers Betrayed America, and he has a fairly controversial thesis that many, not all, of the baby boomer generation exhibit sociopathic behavior and that it has thus contributed negatively to the standing of the country, the recent electorate, and that the boomers have squandered the greatest inheritance in history and that they are shamelessly irresponsible about crises from entitlements to the environment, among other things. So how did you decide which population to study within the boomers? Because you just mentioned that it was broken down across class lines and perhaps racial, ethnic lines.
Right. So I really approached it sort of like a litigator and engineer. I looked at the numbers and I looked for the flow of money, and I wondered who was benefiting and why, you know, and over what period of time the economy had stagnated. So what you'd expect to see is, as boomers take formal power, it would probably take 2 or 3 years for that power to translate into policy and effect. And so you expect to see sort of a rising tide of scandal and corruption and disaster, and indifference to the future from, let's say, the mid to late 1990s on, and then the economic consequences of stagnation and rising debt thereafter. And that is, in fact, what happened. And as you look for the people who were in power, they were all boomers, essentially. 79% of the House in 2008, a notable year, were boomers. And their constituents, their political constituents, were boomers. They were the most important electorate. There were more white boomer voters in the 1990s than there were of all minorities combined.
I have a question coming in from our audience here on in the, you know, the interwebs and Facebook, which I think is important because it's a contrast. What are some good things that boomers have created?
So there are large parts of America that are still highly functional, and my premise is not that of the president. Implicit in Make America Great Again is that America is not great now. I actually do, America is better now than it was when I was born.
And we do all also have, I think, generationally, the premise that every generation wants to do better for its children than we were able to do, you know, and or than the parents were able to do. And so, is that happening?
No, it's not.
Ah.
There is a paper from Brookings, and there's plenty of data in the book. So cohorts that were, you know, in their 20s to 30s in the 1980s, that is to say, sort of boomerish cohorts, experienced substantially rising incomes over their working lives. That's much less true today. I think most of your viewers who are much under 30 will have viewed the past decade, the first decade of their working lives, as at best a wash, and certainly substantially below expectations. And the literature suggests that basically you never recover from early life income losses. So there's already sort of a tangible effect, even for people who are just entering the workforce. And that's disappointing. And I think the greater challenge over the long term is the boomers inherited a country that, you know, whatever its difficulties in the 1970s, and the 1970s, by the way, were not the total disaster show that they've been made out to be. They were bad, but they weren't as bad as the most recent Great Recession. So average wages experienced growth, even though there was a huge population of boomers looking for work, even though we were just recovering from a war, even though there were crises, that exogenous crises like the oil crisis that caused any number of problems. But all the freeways were great, the dams weren't bursting, you know.
and now 40 years later.
Right.
It's like a scene from a CGI movie with like just stuff falling down and things leaking and overflowing, and we really do have a lot of infrastructure problems.
We do. I mean, there are actually states where there are no inspectors of dams. Right?
So can you like look at California, look at what's happening.
And California's a good state.
Yes. It's amazing. Although we'll see if the current administration actually does one of the things that they said, Mr. Trump said, and bringing more jobs and infrastructure.
I'm sure he will to certain areas. So if he wants infrastructure, there were projects that were ready to go, like high-speed rail and electrification of trains in California. Obviously, California is the home of godless Clintonistas, so that funding was pulled earlier this week.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger. Who he loves.
Who's great, who's not a boomer, he's an immigrant. I exclude from my calculations immigrants because they don't have the same sort of relatively homogenous upbringing. But I think the blue states, which is where the people live and where the money are going to be screwed, if I can say that on...
Go ahead.
All right, I think blue states...
We're screwed here in New York.
And we're going to be held hostage by the red states. So the blue states are actually net exporters of, let's just be honest, it's welfare to the central states, and the degree of subsidy is going to deepen under this administration because that's where the present administration's base lies. So even though the obvious place to spend on infrastructure is where there are a lot of people crammed into one place producing real economic output, we're going to build more bridges to nowhere or, you know, highways in the middle of Iowa, and that's how things are going to go. Meanwhile, New York is going to experience funding losses. California is going to experience funding losses. Even the proposals about reforming taxes are in some ways an attack on the younger, more liberal coasts. So that once you eliminate the deductibility of state income taxes, for example, you're punishing working people, that is to say younger people, the boomers who are approaching retirement or are already retired, and you're punishing liberal values.
We could really get deep into some of the ironies in the statistics that you just cited, but then we would be here all day, much as I would like to. That'd be really interesting. I mean, it's sort of like, we're going to create these jobs in this outdated industry, and so nobody will be on welfare, but the wealthy states will export more people. So there's all kinds of contradictions. I think I wanted to go back to what you said about the millennials and the generation and the descendants of the boomers. How did the boomer behavior as parents perhaps negatively affect their children and how they have perceived this world of entitlement and the behaviors that are often mocked, you know, in comedy and so forth at the moment? Because, you know, this is like the millennials, you know, people who have no consciousness. All the studies show that that I've seen anyway, that they only want to do jobs that have a social relevance or, you know, some sort of social benefit, and yet they don't want to get out of bed and go to work. So,
yeah, I don't know how many of those studies I believe. I think the millennial, and to the extent that people want to do jobs that have social meaning, I think that's a good thing. This may be one way in which the boomers have actually done pretty well, is I think they raised their children as best they could on an individual level. Unfortunately, they pursued policies that are going to make it very difficult for their children to sort of, as they used to say, be all they can be. Because in 2030, when we inherit this mess, we'll have World War II levels of debt, we'll have unaddressed climate change, Social Security will be about to run partially insolvent. That happens in 2034, coincidentally right around the actuarially forecasted demise of the median boomer. And so on down the line. And for however much young people want to do a good job, when you arrive at a very stressful period in history where all the problems were in fact actually avoidable, and that's the true tragedy, asking people to behave incredibly selflessly gets harder and harder. And at a certain point, it's not a probable outcome. And so no matter how good the millennials are, and they're a very diverse generation, much harder to characterize than the boomers, who are sort of 78% white and all raised in roughly the same way, and the millennials are much more pluralistic and diverse and of different backgrounds. The boomers have bequeathed a situation which may make it extremely difficult for the millennials to live up to their own aspirations.
Okay, so I'm now thoroughly depressed. It's only 11:30 on a Tuesday. But to borrow from host Ryan Seacrest, tell me something good. Is there something that we can do now and in future policy to correct some of the mistakes of the boomer generation?
Yeah, absolutely. The window of time is short, but fortunately we have elections every 2 years and every 4 years. So in 2018, I think people, younger people especially, 2018, by the way, is the first time the millennials will outnumber the boomers, as I define them. We can start voting against these policies. I didn't think there was a realistic chance of that happening in 2016, and in fact, it did not happen. But in 2018, there will be a chance in the midterms. In 2020, there will definitely be a chance to have a referendum about what is happening now. And we can pursue much more pro-social policies. We can try and fix Social Security. It's much cheaper to do now than it is to do later. We can try and address the climate in a truly serious way. So this month's decision to undo the Obama administration's entire environmental legacy is unhelpful, and yeah, that cost will come back compounded in 4 years. But it will still be bearable. But the time to do something is in the next four years.
Well, which would imply that people young and old have to mobilize now, and there is so much action, you know, that we see every day to the point where it's difficult to even keep up with all the rallies and the activism and stuff like that. So what do you think the most concerted way and the most efficient way to affect the midterm elections is?
Vote. Millennial voters' participation rates are lower. That's normal. Younger people tend to vote less frequently than older people. And the choices in 2016 were less than ideal. The only real champion of youth was Bernie Sanders. He was not an option by the end. Right. So go
very
out there
diplomatic of you, by the way. This is, I am going to put my hands in the frame here.
Yes. My hands. Very good.
Yes. Yeah. That's the Democratic Party would not put him up. And so, yes, he was not an option. And some people are still disappointed about that. And but voting, of course. And there was a groundswell of, you know, people who came out after the recent elections and were protesting, to which people said, well, but did you vote? And then we saw that shocking statistic of how few people actually came out because they thought it wouldn't make a difference, which is a terrible premise and, you know, and will never affect change.
Right. But, you know, for now, we have a relatively free franchise. The boomers haven't been particularly keen on that as they're voting. They're gerrymandering, their gutting of the VRA, and so on down the line, have shown. That's the sort of, like, we can debate about abortion, we can debate about gay rights all day long, but the one core value in the United States is one person, one vote. Now, it took a long time to get there, but by 1965, that had become something of a reality. And for as long as we have the franchise, which they're working on right now, so enjoy it while you've got it, use it.
Okay.
Use it. It's really that simple. And then in personal behaviors, don't expect too much from the boomer government. So save, conserve to the extent that you can, plan for a long working life, and every 2 years when you have the chance to go into the voting booth, ask yourself if your representative, your senator, president, has really done a good job for you. And if the answer is no, then vote them out. You know, most people vote for incumbents. Most of the incumbents are boomers. And if you believe sort of my thesis, then most of the boomers should be viewed with at least some degree of suspicion. These people just keep coming back and back and back. And, you know, if you want to look for causality, just look at the people who've been in charge and the people who've benefited from these policies. And they're overwhelmingly boomer politicians. So let's get rid of them. I mean, certainly, you know, 25, 30 years is more than enough.
It is more than enough. So you heard it here. If you want to affect change, you have to vote, and you also have to follow the policies and the suggestions of an actuary and squirrel stuff away and save, which ironically was sort of the prominence of older generations. So, but I'm thrilled that you joined us. We've been here with Bruce Cannon Gibney, author of a according to Fortune, controversial book, and if you've been watching, a controversial thesis, but a very interesting and proven out thesis, that the boomer generation is a generation of sociopaths, and the book explores how the baby boomers betrayed America. Where and when can we buy this book?
It is on sale today, available at your online or local retailer.
And how can people find you if they want to compliment you or harass you about your theories?
Bruce.
Don't call! No.
BruceGibney.com.
Bruce Gibney, no social media?
No.
He doesn't Twitter, people.
Sorry.
And he does not Snapchat. He told me that when he came in. Okay, which is just fine. Thank you for joining us.
Thank
I really
you so
appreciate
much.
Your time, and good luck with the book. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
And you too.